So this is the 21st of November's 2017 interview of Carol Maltz by Karina Kowalski for the Cooperstown Graduate Program's Research and Fieldwork course, recorded at her home. And so just to begin, can you tell me a little bit about where and when you grew up?
I grew up on Long Island in Merrick. We lived in the same house, in fact. My parents owned the same house until last year when it got sold and they moved upstate to be with us. It's the suburbs of New York City. When I was growing up, there were still farms. As, you know, through the years, all the farms disappeared, and even the smaller houses, a lot of the smaller houses are gone because they get knocked down and these big mansions are built. But went to public school in Merrick. It has one of the best school districts on Long Island. I think that helped me a lot because I realized, you know, as I traveled around and also went to school in New York City, how seeing how much education was lacking, you know, through other people's experiences with whatever schooling they had. So I was just always very proud that New York and where I grew up, we had a really good education system.
That's awesome. Can you tell me a little bit about your family growing up?
One of five children. I'm the second oldest. I have three sisters and a brother. My brother's the youngest. My mom was a homemaker. My dad worked for Pan American Airlines until it went belly up in the early 1990s. Because my dad worked for Pan Am, we were able to get free tickets to travel on Pan Am and some other airlines where you'd get discounted tickets. Of course, they were standby tickets, but back when we started traveling, not everybody else was traveling. So standby still meant, you know, you still would get seats usually. So I used that to my advantage.
Can you tell me a little bit about some of those travels that you went on?
Well, the first trip our dad took us overseas was to Jamaica. And that had that was only for a few days, but it had impact on me because my dad signed up for a tour van. And this gentleman from Jamaica took us around the island, and he showed us the contrast between the poor sections and the ultra wealthy, and it was quite a contrast. At the same time, we were staying at this wonderful hotel that had this pool that went on forever and ever all around the place, and we were on the beach, so we saw the good side, you know, the fun side of Jamaica. We also saw the poverty that people lived in.
And how has that influenced your life today?
Very concerned about, you know, making sure people have the necessities of life. Just, you know, concern for people who are down on their luck or didn't have the advantages I had when I was growing up.
What brought you to upstate New York from Long Island?
Well, I didn't come from Long Island. I moved over from, I was in Pittsburgh at the time. But my introduction to Oneonta in this area was through my older sister, Joan, who transferred with the post office to Oneonta from Connecticut. So that's coming for visits. That's how I learned about upstate New York. And I liked it. That's why I decided in the end to buy a house in Oneonta and move up with my son. Move here with my son.
What did you do when you came up, when you moved here?
I was already licensed to practice law in Pennsylvania. I was inactive with my license in Louisiana, and I could get waived into New York, so I did all the paperwork to get waived into New York, and while that was pending, I was looking at houses in upstate New York, and particularly in Oneonta, but some of the other areas, and I also looked in the Pocono area of Pennsylvania. And I was weighing the pros and cons of all the different areas. And then the house that I eventually bought in Oneonta came up for sale, and I just fell in love with it. And I put in to buy it even before knowing whether I was getting accepted into the New York State Bar, because my thought at that time was, well, I can keep working for the U.S. Department of Labor at home, you know, as an independent contractor, even if I don't get admitted to the bar, because this is just such a nice area and a nice house. But I did get admitted, and then the house was perfect, because then I had my solo practice in the house, in the basement. There was an office. So,
what was it like being a lawyer in Oneonta?
It's funny, because you think this is not a highly populated area, but when you open up the... And back there, you opened up the Yellow Pages. You know, now everyone goes online, but when I moved up in 99, we were still opening up the Yellow Pages, and you'd see pages of lawyers, and you're like, how can this area support all these lawyers? But somehow they do. Somehow there's enough work for the lawyers around here. But, you know, yeah, you make yourself known that you're available. I did do some advertising in the beginning. I wasn't that much into it. I would, my sister Joan, being in the post office, knew a lot of people, so she sent people my way in the beginning, you know, her friends and neighbors and anyone she knew who was looking for legal help. What I learned about post office is how they know everything that's going on if you work in a post, you know, one person, one of the small post offices, you know, people come in to tell you all their troubles. So, yeah, that's how I started. And I had, you know, I had that, I was fortunate because I had that independent contract work with the U.S. Department of Labor, which was work at home. And so I could had that transition from one to the other. And I also had foster children, so that also helped with the transition from one to the other.
What were you doing with the Department of Labor?
I had worked for the Department of Labor the maximum time that you could work, because they had a 2-year limit because they wanted to keep training attorneys to do black lung and longshore work. So I worked for administrative law judges. I started, my first job was in Metairie, which is a suburb of New Orleans. The U.S. Department of Labor had a office there. I worked for Judge McColgan, and after a year, my husband was really tired of Louisiana, and so there was opportunity to transfer, so I transferred to Pittsburgh and did my second year in Pittsburgh. That's why I sat for the Pennsylvania bar.
What were some key issues that you dealt with while being a lawyer?
The main part of my practice was bankruptcies. So I was dealing with a lot of creditor-debtor issues and how people struggle and, helping them to get rid of debt, at the same time understanding, you know, how to protect their assets and how to learn to live with cash on a cash basis, you know, because they have to give up. You know, you can come out of bankruptcy and get a credit card, but you can pay a high amount of interest, and just get the mindset that you should work on a cash basis instead of a credit basis.
How did you get involved with the OCCA?
When I first moved up in 99, they had Hazardous Waste Day. That I was here in July, and they had Hazardous Waste Day in September, and I had to get rid of some paint or something. So at that time, they were doing Hazardous Waste Day in Cooperstown, and, you know, I had registered for it, and I was coming up to it, and at that time, Martha Clavo and Teresa Winchester were manning the line going into it, you know, getting people's information and survey and all, and Teresa in particular identified who she was and told me about the organization, said, you know, can volunteer sometime, whatever. And Teresa's the one who kept following up with me, and we became friends. And she's the one who approached me about becoming a member of the board.
What made you decide to take Teresa up on her offer to become member of the board?
If I recall correctly, I was reluctant at first because I was already an ex officio member of the City of Oneonta's Commission on Human Rights. But it was environmental issues, and that's important to me. It should be important to everyone. She was just persuasive, talked about what they did. I knew OCCA was very active because Teresa was very active. She did all these press releases. Like, OCCA was, like, in the Daily Star almost every day. People were thinking that it was a government agency because it was just in the news all the time. I mean, she was out there promoting OCCA, and she was going to all these town meetings. She was on top of everything. OCCA at that time was impressive because Teresa was impressive. So seeing how hardworking she was and what they were working on, that was very attractive.
What are you proud of accomplishing while serving on the board of OCCA?
At that time, Teresa was transitioning herself. She was believing that we needed to be more involved with having an expert to lend to the towns, to lend the expertise to the towns for planning. And so she hired on Eric Miller. So that was something that she promoted. The other thing was Dreams Park had applied to have more acreage turned into ball fields. And it was a question under the State Environmental Quality Act as to, when the state has a law that deals with when someone wants to undertake a project that involves so much acreage and you're change in the environment, you're supposed to do this whole impact, including on the community, like how it affects the community, so that all of this is considered before a project is approved. What you're not supposed to do, and you're supposed to tell the town or whatever municipality it is what the whole plan is. You're not supposed to say, I'm going to open up this ballpark, have four ball fields, when in the back of your mind, you know you own all this acreage and you're going to do 100 ball fields. You're not supposed to, do it in those sort of steps. You're supposed to be upfront so that people can understand what the real impact is going to be in the long run. So the Dreams Park did not do it that way. They said, we're just going to do this. And then all of a sudden they wanted to do more. And it's getting close to the Susquehanna River. You know, their property borders the river. And all their neighbors are on wells. It's an issue of how much water was going to, would other wells be going dry? And where was all the sewage going? So do we need a stoplight? And what is this going to do to the noise, the light? There's so much light that comes from there. It was affecting people in the town of Springfield as well, and Otsego. So a lot of people were upset. So I handled the lawsuit for OCCA. We sued on behalf of our members. But it went before Judge Dowd, and one thing you learn in law is that judges are persons too, and they have their things that they lean towards. So when there's discretion in the law, they can lean one way or the other. That's where you get that difference between judges. And Judge Dowd is generally pro-business. So we didn't succeed before Judge Dowd in striking down the the town allowing James Park to expand. And then OCCA decided we decided to focus on the water issues, I think, and help the areas deal with the impact that was coming down. But in terms of just keeping OCCA in the forefront, keeping it running, keeping it funded, you know?
How did you keep it running and funded? What were some of the things you did?
Well, Teresa did the newsletters. You show your members that you're active, that you're doing stuff, and there's reasons to fund us. You know, I know the members who we sued on behalf of were happy that we at least tried.
I know that the Lake Festival and the Earth Festival were both started while you were president of OCCA. What's it like seeing these programs grow and develop over the years?
Oh, it's wonderful. I go to the Earth Festival every year. And I support it financially, minimally, but I do send something every year for it, and I love the recycling. It's just great, and I'm glad we have it.
Can you tell me a little bit about what they're like?
It's held at Milford Central School, and it's usually in April. They have a styrofoam collection, because there's no place unless it has 1 through 6 on the recycling to put any place. So styrofoam, they have the paper shredder, which is a great help to many of us. And what's really funny, because I think everyone has this feeling, it takes so long to get the papers together, and you think you have all these papers, and then they have a garbage can, and you just fill it up so little. Like, it just seems like you did all this work to get rid of all this paper, but it doesn't really amount to a lot, which I guess in a way is good, because they get a lot of paper from everyone. But then they have all the stands, educational stands. We did... One year I worked on the cassettes. People were able to throw out their cassettes, and we had to break them apart and put the plastic in one thing, the tape, in another. So, and the metal inside, they had little metal pieces that was in another pile. So people have an opportunity to get rid of a lot of things that they ordinarily wouldn't be able to recycle. You know, they'd be throwing it out in the trash, so glad we give them that opportunity.
Yeah. What was it like seeing the whole community come together to recycle like that?
You know, when they first started recycling up here, people were sort of resistant. But I think it's now a habit for most people, which is really nice. Like, once you get into it, you just know. You don't throw that out in the garbage. You put it in that can. So it shows how people can adjust quite easily if they just stop resisting, you know. It does work, you know, to have the recycling. It's a good thing.
Was it there a lot of resistance initially to changes like that?
Yeah, as I recall, when Otsego County was mandating the recycling, people were saying, oh, but you use so much water to wash, you know, the stuff, the cans and bottles out. And then I remember one year they were talking about how Terry Bliss had to follow sneakily, you know, he would just find some garbage trucks and all, and follow them, because I think he caught at least one business that was, after people had done all this recycling work, was taking the recycling and throwing it in with the regular trash. Oh. So they started cracking down on that. So it took a while, but I haven't heard of any scandals, so to speak, lately. I think people just understand, and they just recycle.
Yeah. What is your approach to educating the public about environmental issues?
Environmental issues can be, like, really complex. There are a lot of things even I can't understand. You need to be a scientist. But basically, if someone says something to me and it's illogical, okay, so then I, on a personal level, I try to say something that shows that they're not thinking something through. And climate change is the big thing right now, people think, because you can have cold weather that the earth isn't warming. Like, they don't take into that the earth warming is the whole earth. It's the temperature of the earth, not the temperature of your little area. So, you know, analogizing it to the human body, like, you know, you have a headache, or, you know, or the temperature of your body versus, you know, a hot head and or whatever, just, you know, to try to put it on a level that's more that they can understand. But it's the problem with something like global warming is we all contribute to it in different degrees, and we're all going to suffer from it. It's one person, we all impact each other, and I feel sorry, and, you know, for, like, the islands in the Pacific that are going under. But there's so much that's going on that affects, you know, the Zika virus, you know. You know, those birth defects are horrible, and, you know, it hit Miami, and then look at the expense Miami had with using all those chemicals to kill the mosquitoes, and, you know, it's just this never-ending sight, things that are going on, because, you know, dominoes that are going to fall because of things we can't even change anymore. But I, you know, we have a lot of water here. We need to protect the water we have, make sure it's always drinkable. We need to really appreciate the resources we have around here. I'm very happy to know how much land the Otsego Land Trust has been able to have people put aside with conservation easements or purchases they've made. It's we have something that's really worth saving around here. So,
how have you contributed to helping the environment in your own life and home?
Just generally what other people do. Recycling, make sure your house is insulated, keeping the thermostat down at night. We haven't gotten solar yet. I've always felt that the solar farms would be the way to go, and the wind farms. Having people do it on an individual basis on their houses is always seemed to me to be out of reach for most of the people. We have always relied on energy as a municipality or community basis. And I think that's the way it will be in the future, even though there's always the prospect of going off the grid, you know, for people who want to be off the grid. But when you think of the way energy has been in this country, it's very hard to go off the grid, particularly if you have to teach people the technology that's being used, like, you know, how to fix a solar panel, or, you know, do you get to, you know, it's probably going to be more common now that you can call a handyman who knows solar stuff, but when it was starting, it wasn't that common. You know, I know someone who had solar who would change the positioning of the panels throughout the day. You know, it takes people who have time and the ability to learn if they want to go off the grid. Not everybody can do that. They work full-time jobs, they have kids, they have parents, they have lots of obligations. So, but for me, so far we've just, and I'm selling my house in Oneonta, so I didn't put anything else into that. Just, you know, what the basic things that we already know to do.
What were some challenges serving as board president for the OCCA?
We all had different backgrounds and strengths. My challenge was, you know, it's in Cooperstown, so most of the board members were from the Cooperstown area and were very focused on Otsego Lake. And here I was from Oneonta, and Otsego Lake is nice, but it's not my backyard and it's not the thing that's on my mind all the time. So, in a way, I felt it was very much centered on Cooperstown. And, we have Goodyear Lake, we have other lakes around that, and the rivers and the streams are all important. So it was, and Teresa, too, tried to sort of, with newsletters and her going around to the different towns as executive director, was trying to balance it somehow so that everyone in the county could feel that OCCA was working on their behalf, not just for Otsego Lake. And, the Lake Festival does focus on Otsego Lake. It's held on Otsego Lake. It's a beautiful lake and all, but not everyone lives up there, so. And our drinking water comes from elsewhere. So, yeah.
Where does the drinking water here come from?
Here in Davenport in Delaware County, we have a very small water district here, 40 houses or buildings. So we actually have water from a reservoir that's up on the hill somewhere. But other people, there'd be the private wells. In Oneonta, we get... Oneonta has a reservoir, and I was one of the houses in the town of Oneonta who had city water, and that all came from a reservoir. But if you don't have a water district, you're digging a well on your property and having it pumped up.
What efforts did the OCCA do to maintain that good well water?
Well, the issue that came up with us was the Dreams Park one, so we filed the lawsuit. People did complain about dry wells because Dreams Park was taken using a lot of water, and they were using well water. They're using the same aquifer as any other property in that area. I don't know how it is now. I didn't follow up on how they're doing. Eric Miller was going around, so I don't know what the end result of that was.
How did your gender play a role in your actions while in a position of power on the OCCA board?
I'm one of the fortunate people who have not felt any difference because of my gender on any board I've served on.
That's great. What were things the environmentalists or conservationists were concerned with 10, 20 years ago, and kind of how are they different today that you see?
Climate change and global warming have really come more and more into focus. As years go by, it becomes the overriding issue. It's the thing that has to be addressed and prepared for and slowed. I don't think any environmental group today can say any issue is more important than that, because it affects everything. It's going to affect our health. It's going to affect where people can live. It's going to affect migration, more refugees, a civil unrest, unraveling of governments. It all comes to environment. People are going to need water.